shift will need to happen if folks believe that they need to have more diversity. If all of the best bricklayers in the world are straight white men, then the bricklaying industry is doing a bang up job. But if they
Still,
think
a lot of them
maybe,
are Italian, but yeah. Yeah,
if they think maybe potentially some really good bricklayers might be gay or even female, then they're going to have to start thinking about how do you draw on the best candidate. Yeah, just I think you're right. It's a really sticky subject.
As a closing on this, I would like to remind you of the episode of Letterkenny when they had the debate where Squirrely Dan had the "you chose labor" speech. I don't know if you remember that one, but they're basically the spirit of it was, it does not matter who you are, what your family is, your ethnic background, your language, whether you're a Canadian citizen or an immigrant or a refugee. We don't care if you're gay or straight. You chose labor, do labor. If you work hard and do your job, you will get respect. That actually is something that I noticed on the site. People were more likely to actually, the number one complaint was that guy is slow. That guy's no good. We have to redo his work all the time. And if you're competent and good at your job, they're willing to overlook a ton of stuff. Like there's one guy on the site who barely spoke English and he was East African, but I can't remember where he was from in specific. And people just didn't care because he was really good at mudding. He could plaster the walls quick as anyone. And everyone's like, he's good as far as we're concerned. And I think that leaning into that spirit, if you're talking about labor in specific and really just saying like praise competency and accept people who are good at their job and get stuff done on time, I really do think that's the way forward.
Absolutely. Well, it has been an interesting discussion. We are going to be jumping to our first track and we will be back just after this.
Grant me now the dignity. You can listen if you want, sit and listen, look away. Maybe you will hear me clearly if you cannot see my face. And I'll tell you not to worry, but I got dressed up today. And I know you'll worry anyway. Separate the art from the artist, separate the woman from her words, separate the method from the message, separate the scene and the hurt, celebrate the content of my character and never let me speak. Honor me posthumously, then say I'm finally free. Well, I am carved from earth and stone and blood and water, and I am someone's favorite person, someone's daughter. And I know you're just the cashier, someone's kid, but I saw the way you looked at me, I did. And now it's my super ego against your id. Separate the woman from her word, separate the woman from, separate the method from the message, separate the scene and the hurt, celebrate the content of my character and never let me speak. Honor me posthumously, then say I'm finally free, like it was. Thank you.
welcome back to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we just heard See Me Now by Clara Chavon out of, I want to say, the East Coast. Yeah, so great little new track from Clara Chavon. And we are diving right into it. I want to start off with a bit of an update from Ireland. Do you remember the dreadful murders in Sligo, Ireland, that happened over the summer?
Oh, yeah. The name Sligo is familiar, yeah. Are there updates to the case?
It was, absolutely, yep. Yeah. So he is now, an Irish court has convicted Yusuf Palani to two concurrent life sentences. He's 23 years old, so it'll be there for quite a while. Yeah, he targeted, according to information released to the Irish Times, Palani targeted his victims, Moffat and Snee, using gay dating apps in April of 2022. It was unbelievably vicious. He is described as being very hostile and prejudicial against gay men. He murdered two of them, so I think hostile and prejudicial is putting it lightly. Two concurrent life sentences. It is unlikely that he will see freedom, although it is in Ireland, so who knows. But I thought it'd be important to give updates occasionally when we come across them, especially when we hear about these horrific murders, but then they are solved and consequences follow.
Yes. Well, especially since there's the narrative that, the state never does anything about it. The state never investigates. They never do arrests. They never imprison people. They never take it seriously. And it's good to see over time that we can definitely say the use of the word never is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You can be skeptical about how often, but you can't say never. And that's something.
I do have another update. This one is in the Orlando Sentinel. Now, you must recall what is, in history of the United States, the worst mass shooting against the LGBT community ever. Mm-hmm. And that was the Pulse nightclub massacre that happened in Orlando. Also, I think one of the deadliest mass shootings in the U.S. of all time. It killed 49 people, dozens and dozens wounded. Mm-hmm. The owners of the Pulse nightclub created a foundation where they aimed to raise money to create a survivor's walk, which would have just been the path between the nightclub and the local hospital, where many folks were treated, as well as a memorial on the site of the club and a museum. I believe that the owners have since stepped away from the foundation, stepping back almost altogether. Barbara Palmer and Rosario, her husband, as well as Daytona businessman Michael Panaggio, own the nightclub. But that is potentially, until now, they are looking to be selling the nightclub to the city of Orlando, which does seem to be far more interested in the place as a memorial. And like I said earlier, the owners had attempted to create a foundation, had attempted to become a memorial. It's several years later now. Nothing has particularly happened. The massacre happened in 2016. Mm-hmm. So, it's what was that, 6 years?
Yeah.
7 years? Six? No.
For municipal purchase, that's on schedule, though.
Well, they had initially been in talks about buying the property for $2.5 million. City councillors kind of barked at the price the deal fell apart. It looks like efforts to create their own museum memorial have also sort of floundered. The city of Orlando has now voted on a $2 million purchase for the club, which I believe people are saying is just a fingernail above the fair market value for it. So hopefully this means that we will see a memorial erected for what is one of the most horrific crimes against the LGBT community in North American history.
Yeah.
I've got some doubts. It's also worth noting that in Orlando, 200,000 people just marched for Pride. So there is lots of good news in there as well. Orlando is an all doom and gloom. 200,000 people recently marched in Pride. And it was overall a great day. Speaking of marching in Pride, in Johannesburg, they had dedicated this year's march in Johannesburg in South Africa to Uganda, and in particular to Ugandans who now have one of the most vitriolic anti-gay pieces of legislation in existence. I think last week we mentioned that the World Bank had pulled its funding or pulled any future loans out of Uganda. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you recall that.
Yes, I do actually remember that. There's a few, there's also a few neighboring countries in the region who basically said, like, I mean, in more political terms than this, but they basically said, calm down, bro. Like, that's a bit much. And South Africa has definitely been they have a pretty good record in the region of trying to enforce, update, proliferate the general concept of human rights, basically, and equal treatment under the law. There's a whole bunch of neighboring countries that have never really needed that. So, I mean, you never really hear about anything from Swaziland, Lesotho, or Botswana. There's quite a few countries in South Africa that, or Southern Africa, I should say, that sort of, you know, skip over that reputation of the region. So it's, for a parade like this to happen in Johannesburg doesn't really surprise me.
Mm-hmm. There was about 23,000 people who marched in Johannesburg.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good parade. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
that's it's a hell of a lot of people. It's worth noting that as we're sticking to Uganda, the U.S. State Department just issued an advisory on the 23rd, a government issued business advisory for anyone conducting business in the state of Uganda, in the country of Uganda, informing businesses, individuals, and U.S. persons, including health providers, members of institutions, etc., of the risks they face in terms of conducting business. They should be aware of financial reputational risks from endemic corruption, as well as violence against human rights activists, the media, health workers, minority groups, and LGBTQI persons, as well as political opponents. Mm-hmm. So, the U.S. State Department very much raising concerns and what have you about Uganda. There was also a news story in the Gay Times talking about, sort of further down the line, you know, we talk about how Uganda's just had access to loans pulled by the World Bank, but now, you know, Kenya, that struggled with access to financial markets, there's a great story in the Gay Times talking about how they have, trans folks in particular, have been rejected from normal bank loans, and now they have to look at bank sharks, or loan sharks, sorry, not bank sharks. I feel like bank sharks would just be big sharks, to be able to access finances. So, you know, we may see something similar in Uganda. Does blocking access to financial trade help or hinder? Probably does less help. But yeah, I mean, for the rest of the world, options are limited, and turning off the taps is one of the only tools available.
Well, there is a concern that all they're going to end up doing is just going to China, because China, the Chinese presence in Africa, especially sort of the eastern side of the continent, because when you say Eastern Africa, that's a region, but it's kind of like basically the whole side that faces the ocean that China's on. They've been in the region for quite some time, and they've kind of proven themselves to sort of not really care about human rights. They just care, in a Star Trek sense, they are the Ferengi of the world's nations. They're like, if you have the money, we have the services. If you don't have the money, we don't have the services. And they're kind of indifferent to a lot of these issues. And it's basically, that is a you thing. If you want to do that sort of thing, that's your business. We're not going to interfere with that. And they have been growing in the region because of that, because every time the World Bank or the U.S. turns off the taps, then, and not just China, but other economies as well, have the opportunity to step in and say, well, we don't care. Do you want our money? We'll give you money.
It's interesting you mentioned the Ferengi, because I think it's actually an excellent metaphor. And China watchers would also comment that recently, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is very lavish, lots and lots of money spent on major projects to help improve trade routes out to and into China. Mm-hmm. Except a lot of countries aren't necessarily paying back the deals. It's the if you have money, we have the services. Well, it turns out several countries are struggling to have the money. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, although China may turn a blind eye to human rights complaints in their own backyard or elsewhere, you know, there is a certain amount of frustration that's been expressed when countries are not paying things back. Maybe China is less forgiving on the money front than perhaps the World Bank or the IMF has been. You know, so it you know, you're right. You know, China doesn't care about these things where the Western world does, but at the same time, China cares more about these other things, which perhaps the Western world isn't as committed. There are always strings attached, and they just have to pick their poison. But the attack on LGBT rights has been roundly condemned by these African states. And it's not getting better. Just this past week, Nigeria's paramilitary, of course, there was a coup. Sorry, I'm thinking of Niger. In Nigeria, the military has just arrested 76 people that they accuse of participating in an LGBT same-sex wedding. So 76 people rounded up and arrested in Nigeria. And this things like that continue to happen all over the region. So we'll keep an eye on that as it develops. Now, in good news, 176,000 people gathered in Taiwan for what is the largest pride event in Asia this past week.
What's the largest one in history? It's probably Mardi Gras in probably Australia or something.
No, I think it may have been Toronto with the World Pride where it tipped a million.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But I do think Spain's World Pride had a really high number, and I think New York has clicked into the million mark a couple of times as well. But I mean, 176,000 people, that is one heck of a lot of people. And like I said, it is a, according to pinknews.co.uk, last year's numbers was 120,000. This year's 170. That's a massive spike. 50,000 people in 1 year decided to go attend the Pride Parade. I don't know if, you know, what that would look like, seeing such a massive increase in Pride attendance.
Well, it would definitely mean that all the store owners in the region would suddenly be selling a whole lot more sandwiches than last year. Like, there's a knockdown effect on local economy that disproportionately affects small business, which is great, which is one of the reasons why, I mean, certainly here in Canada, one of the most common sponsors for Pride are local business associations of various types. It is very common for them to get involved because of what it can do to the economy of the region. If you're talking more about the cultural issue, then certainly the perception of acceptance in the region would definitely go up as well.
So the last story I have is a statement issued in sort of early October. People were referring to what they call the bigot button. So everyone is familiar, I believe, with school book fairs, where, you know, Scholastic and other vendors come in and people can buy books, they can, what have you. I remember them in my school. It really helped to foster a climate of passion for reading. Well, in early October, somebody noticed that some school boards had a certain selection, but in other school boards, things were missing. And it was accused of, Scholastic was accused of having essentially a button where you could remove books related to LGBT topics, sexual and gender identity, and potentially race, what was referred to as the bigot button. Now, Scholastic adamantly denied this. They issued a statement sort of mid-October saying that this is a misconception, absolutely not true whatsoever. Anyway, fast forward another couple of weeks, and Scholastic has issued a notice to authors and illustrators that they are now ending their policy, which they had earlier denied existed, of allowing schools to opt out of their diverse offerings. So it looks like the bigot button has been turned off, and Scholastic has agreed that maybe this may not have been the best idea. The decision had been made with good intentions, you know, so is the highway to hell. So like I said,
a small degree of tailoring is reasonable.
Absolutely.
If you are not a school within the local Catholic school board, then having books on the list about Jesus Christ being your Lord and Savior is probably fair. Now, there will be Christian kids at secular schools as well. So, you know, maybe you could argue that they deserve the right to buy books about that. But, you know, it's not just about making them available. It's also about what's on the pamphlet. Because I remember when I was a kid, I started off in the French school system and I transferred to the English school system. And I remember seeing that there was a whole bunch of books on those Scholastic pamphlets that were available both in French and English, and some of them that were not available in French and English. And it was, some of them were translated, some of them weren't. Some of them were on the list, but they weren't on the cover. And I think it's just a matter of, like, they knew what was going to sell. And let me tell you, on the cover of everything, French and English, was that book about the mouse who had a cookie and now wanted a glass of milk. That was everywhere. It was everywhere because it sold. So I think it's an issue of putting front and center the things they think will sell. I think that's fair. If you're going to just delete it from the list as not being available on the order form, that's different.
What it was is, you know, these book says they've got sort of themed bookcases.
Okay.
And what Scholastic had done is put all of their diverse books onto one bookcase.
Okay.
So then you could whole hog just opt out of having any diversity by just not having that bookcase.
Okay.
So all of them would be missing.
Okay, so are we talking about, like, books about, you know, my experiences growing up as a trans tween was on the same bookshelf as, like, West African fairy tales? Was it, like, how broad a net are we calling diversity here?
I mean, you give very specific examples there, but no, I mean, first of all,
West African fairy tales are fascinating. But yeah,
age appropriate and you know, relevant. But I mean, there is also, I think the bookcase was called what is the name of the bookcase? They called it "Share Every Story, Celebrate Every Voice." Okay. So it's stories that showcase, you know, diverse experiences or stories written by diverse authors. You know, that's really the gist of it here. I don't know if West African folks and fairy tales would necessarily land in that particular bookcase. Okay. But anyway, they've realized that by maybe organizing them all into the same place so the people can just wholeheartedly opt out, not the best idea. And their update will be rolled out in early January. Worth mentioning that this initiative by Scholastic is specific to the United States of America. It is unclear if the Canadians were given the same option, but Scholastic alleges that it is in order to comply with the critical race theory bans that have been popping up in various states in the US. We have run out of time, and we are going to be playing out with "I Am the Moon" by The Two Body Problem. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Was there a push or a pull that took me from my own path and led you to make space for me? Between the endless nothing and your blues and greens. I hate the way we have to move in opposition, that you need. keeps telling me to trust my intuition, but I can't fall out of your sky. But I want to.
From jail and imprisoning the police.
Appreciate your generosity. Each year for a week, we host Fundrive, our annual fundraising campaign that boosts our budget and supports independent radio. Thank you for your support.